Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, episode number 8. Your hosts today are Chad Beckman and Ed Snodgrass. Today, they talk with Robert Wood, Chief Information Security Officer at SourceClear. Now, let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it and keep it running, it will blow up.
But you also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats,
Today, we are glad to welcome Robert Wood, Chief Information Security Officer at SourceClear. Robert, thank you for joining Ed and I today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. To get started, why don't you give our audience a little background on your career? How did you get to the place you're at today? And then let's dive into what your role is today, and then we can dive into further conversation about the industry. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great. So my career got started in security in a little bit of a funky way. Like I did not start off with my parents having bought me a computer that I learned how to program at an early age and all of that. When I was in college, I was actually studying sports management at Syracuse, and that was because I wanted to. I had this dream of becoming a football coach at an elite level, and as far as I got, coaching football was at the high school level while I was still in college, and I had a lot of fun. And the reason that I was really drawn to that was I love strategy. I love the concept of the sum being greater than its parts and leadership and all of that. And as a kid, I studied a lot of like Don Shula, Vince Lombardi, and you know, some of the coaching greats, Bill Walsh, all these guys. And I made the decision when I was actually one class away from graduating from Syracuse. All I had was a capstone left that, you know, coaching was going to be a really volatile career, and I was going to be moving around a lot, which is ironic because I've moved around a lot because I got into consulting eventually. But I made the decision that, like, you know, I eventually want a family, and so I'm gonna go after something a little bit more stable that hopefully brings together all the things that I still love about this potential career path. And I ended up reading an article on digital forensics randomly because I've always done just a ton of reading across a number of different fields. And I was like instantaneously hooked. Like I thought it was fascinating that you had these international men or women of mystery that were breaking into systems, and these other folks who were, you know, playing detective and trying to figure out how everything happened. And being a Batman fan, as I have been for basically my entire life, that was like the coolest thing in the world to me. So I actually ended up changing majors at that point, and I poured all the hustle that I had into the pursuit of that information security career. And I ended up picking up a job or an internship initially at this really boutique consulting firm up in upstate New York. And I got exposure to not only forensics, but everything from vulnerability assessments to full on like no scope, no boundaries, red teaming, to physical security, to, you know, almost everything under the sun that I could have wanted. And from there, I transitioned into a bigger consultancy, Cigital, which is now acquired, had been acquired by Synopsys. So it is a business unit of Synopsys. And I worked there for close to 5 years, and I started up a red team practice, just hustled, worked my way through the ranks, eventually transitioning into a product role, where I joined a healthcare company in San Francisco. I was leading, starting a security program from the ground up and leading it once it was built. And then I transitioned into where I am today, which is the chief security officer over at SourceClear. So that is my roundabout way and story as to how I got to where I'm at today.
So the most important question is, do you have fantasy football that you're engaged in?
Every so often I do. I did not do it this past year because I was just so out of touch with everything that was happening in the pro leagues, and I don't like playing games that I'm not that I, warped that I'm not set up very nicely to win. So even though I do have a very competitive streak, I like to make sure I have every advantage I can. So in that case, it's lots of knowledge about the statistics and the players and the trades and all that jazz. And I was not up to snuff this year. So
got it.
So, Robert, that's awesome. So thank you for kind of giving us a rundown of your journey, if you will. And, I mean, obviously you've seen a lot of things, right, within the field itself. You've kind of touched a lot of the levers. And given that, I mean, how have you really kind of seen the discipline of information security really kind of change over the years?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So when I first started in security, it was a lot of – it was a lot of hands-on stuff. There wasn't a ton of automation, and there wasn't a ton of instrumentation.
What year was this, Robert?
It was around 2011, so seven, eight years ago.
Okay.
You know, the cloud was like a very, very new thing. It was still very much untrusted. You know, you had all of these penetration tests and such that were kind of driving the industry. You know, everything from like your Metasploits to your custom exploits to your core impacts and et cetera, et cetera. And I think one of the things that's really fascinated me in the network security space and the AppSec space and in all of these different areas that I've gotten exposure to is a greater focus on bringing software engineering and just good automation hygiene into the security space and like taking advantage of all these other technologies and practices and such that other fields are to make ourselves more efficient. I think that's been one really positive trend that I think has a downside in the sense that we are very, very focused on technology now and not focused on people. But all in all, I think it's been a general net positive.
That's good. So what have you done to, you know, in your role inside of your company to perhaps balance that, you know, the emphasis on technology, creating that efficiency, which is really important, mm-hmm. But also to balance the people component and ensuring that people have the right education, the right knowledge and awareness, as we call it oftentimes. What has really worked for you to establish that balance? Because I completely agree. I think we are too focused on tools or have been. I think the tide might be changing a little bit, but I think historically we have been too focused on the technology that tooling, supports
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, awareness and education and stuff like that's one part of this general people perspective issue that I mentioned earlier, or that I believe is an issue anyways, because, you know, everyone is entitled to their own perspectives and opinions. But I think the bigger thing with technology is that, and I actually just wrote an article for TechBeacon on this exact thing based on a conference talk I'm giving later this year. And it's, I think technology is driving and forming and kind of dominating the way that we implement certain things and where we implement certain things. So if you think about the typical security person who goes to a conference, they'll go to a security conference, whether it's B-Sides or an OWASP conference or Black Hat or, you know, what have you, and they'll learn about all these cool techniques. They'll learn about all these amazing tools that are getting released, some open source, some not. And then they'll take those things, and whether or not they apply to the particular context in which their organization operates and their tech stacks, their, you know, tech stack is like the easy box to check, but like whether or not their developers and their teams actually work that way, it doesn't necessarily matter, because, you know, those tools are, they're going to solve a particular problem, and so they're coming in. And so I think where security needs to be really mindful is being empathetic to those who we are trying to serve and we are trying to help. So, you know, whether that's an IT team, a development team, an operations team, legal, executives, like everyone has their own thing in an organization. Everyone was brought in and hired, and they stay on board because they're providing a unique slice of value. And I think we in the security field owe it to ourselves to be really empathetic of what those particular individuals in their roles are going to, and try to shape and mold the things that we're introducing to the company or the organization, if you're, you know, not working for a private sector company, and, you know, be empathetic to those things, shape, mold what we're doing to best elevate them, to prop them up, to make them better, more effective, more efficient, instead of kind of taking them and try to stuff them into our security box. Because we can't necessarily, I don't think, expect, let's say, a doctor to, and I love using the doctor analogy, so bear with me, but I don't think it's right for us to expect medical staff, doctors, nurses, to basically be security professionals on top of being medical professionals, because, you know, we don't, as security professionals, take the time to understand, you know, how to interpret an x-ray, how to, work an MRI machine, or, you know, any of these other things that they, that their profession is so focused on and is, you know, where they derive their value from. So we need to be empathetic that, like, they have their own stuff to think about and try to change things to be supportive of that. Does that make sense?
It does.
It does. Yeah, it does. That's a fantastic segue, actually. I like your metaphor there. And Chad and I obviously have the opportunity to talk to a lot of security leaders, a lot of business leaders, a lot of technology leaders, you know, throughout the industry in many, many different verticals. Yeah. And one of the concerns from a business and an IT standpoint that we hear a lot is that there's a challenge in the fact that, you know, well, we know that security is important, right? And I'm speaking from a business leader's perspective now. We know security is important. We know the company has to protect itself against breach and theft of IP and phishing and all of the things out there. But we kind of feel sometimes that security, you know, operates kind of within that box, right? We know that what they do is important, but we don't have any context, right? You know, we try to, like, push a new application or a new feature on our website or whatever it is, and, you know, security typically comes back and they say, well, hold on, you know, you can't do that, or, you know, and there's no context there from a business perspective to understand, okay, well, why are they telling us no? You know, what is so important about this or that or whatever? So, you know, the long way around that I'm taking there is, you know, what are some of the techniques and some of the methods that you've kind of used, you know, throughout your career to really kind of partner with, like you said, people that don't necessarily do security every single day. They don't necessarily understand all the complexity and the nuance. You know, how do you kind of help them understand why it's important, what the context is, and then, you know, even more importantly, kind of get them involved to be force multipliers, if you will, within the company itself, to kind of be on the lookout for things that might be security related.
Yeah, it's a really important topic. So the thing that's worked really well for me, and it took me a lot of trial and fire, trial by error and a lot of fire to learn this lesson, was to figure out what language your target audience, whether they're talking to you or you're talking to them, speaks. Like, what's valuable to them, what they are measured by, what they're performanced on, what is success and what is failure for them, things like that. So, for instance, if you're talking to a CFO or a controller, and this was, you know, one of my big areas of friction and issue where I, you know, just continually was running into a wall, was trying to pitch a controller for more budget for a particular initiative that I was working on, and I wasn't putting it into a terms that resonated with that individual. So, you know, I was talking about the benefits that we were going to get for our team, you know, how much faster we were going to be able to get through security alerts and just automated triage and instrumentation of this entire security monitoring process, and why that was a particularly valuable thing for us. And what I failed to grasp initially, and eventually I got it, was that in talking to that individual, what resonated to them was, if we do this thing, then it's going to result in such and such savings on our bottom line through employees' time. So it's an opportunity cost benefit. And that was really, like, that was the thing that actually ended up resonating with that individual. And so I think if you're talking to developers, you got to figure, you know, they're being measured and performanced on the quality of their code, the speed of their releases, you know, whatever it happens to be for that organization. A board member is going to have a particular set of, you know, interests and things that they're measuring. You know, what are the KPIs that go govern and function around, or, you know, kind of orbit around that particular function. And so when you can figure that out and you really understand who your target audience is and what's valuable to them, then I think you can start to basically just put your security message through that lens. It's almost like putting it through a filter, and then it comes out on the other side, and it hopefully resonates with them a little bit more. And I don't think that's going to work every single time, but I think you have a much better shot at actually getting somebody to listen, because it's coming from a place that shows you understand what's important to them, not only what's important to you.
Now, a word from our sponsor, TrustMap, the business management system for security leaders. TrustMap has been described as a solution in a couple of different ways. For example, it has been described as a GRC platform, and it's also been described as a business management platform for security teams. You see, TrustMap is designed for security teams by security teams. The genesis of TrustMap began when a CIO asked the question, "Show me the state of our security program. Where are we today, and where are we going over the next 2 to 3 years? And how much is it going to take to get there?" One example of TrustMap solving real-world challenges begins with a customer in the insurance services industry that I'll refer to as David. David, like many other security program managers, struggled to coordinate all of the activities across various teams to determine the security program performance and also set priorities to improve security and manage risk over the next calendar year. Now, we'll pause there. We'll come back a little later in the podcast to learn the outcome of David's challenge using TrustMap. For now, listeners of the podcast should know that you can schedule a free trial of TrustMap. Go to trustmap.com/business. Now, let's pick up where we left off.
So if you have multiple audiences, like a developer or your earlier example, a doctor, do you, as a security leader, have to tailor that message for each kind of role within the business that you are trying to influence change with?
I don't think you necessarily have to. I mean, you don't have to do any of these things per se, but I think it's valuable to do so to the extent that it's feasible. So, you know, if you're talking to, let's say, doctors, nurses, or other healthcare provider personnel, like, you can probably generalize it
Group such them. That it's
applicable to the broad spectrum of healthcare provider personnel. And you could do the same for technology personnel. You know, you don't want to spend all of your time, you know, translating your message, because then you're probably not going to get a ton of other stuff done. But to, you know, whatever is feasible, I think it's worth your time if you want your message to get across and it's something you really think needs to be heard, to go through that translation step. And I don't think you have to, you know, be painstakingly, you know, intentional about it, where you're spending a ton of time trying to figure people out. You know, a good thing that that I've started to do now when I join new organizations is lay out all of the major players and just jot down a few general notes on, and this might be the major players or the major functions like finance, engineering, product, IT, et cetera, and just jot down a few things that I think are going to be relevant to them. And then I just keep those notes up to date as I learn more things. And then whenever I'm going to pitch something to them that's really important, I'll pull those notes up really quickly and then just, you know, try to phrase my conversation and, you know, work in some of that language, work in some of those, here's how it's going to potentially benefit you, here's how it could affect you, and this, and this way that I know is important to you, so on and so forth. And really seeking to, like, understand their perspective, I think is ultimately the big important thing.
Well, that's great practice. And I think it, you know, it kind of emphasizes the fact that, you know, a successful security leader has to be more than just, you know, a solid technologist.
Absolutely.
You know, they've, you know, developing those key relationships of working hand in hand with, you know, your business stakeholders, your IT stakeholders, your end users, I mean, you know, potentially your customers. I mean, that's an extremely critical aspect to the job that, you know, again, we see a lot of challenge out there with regard to, you know, kind of that well-rounded and you know, full tool set security leader, so to speak. So, you know, good advice.
If you think about, like, every single conference you go to, every single training you see, the security curriculums in universities, you know, 99.9% of them are all technology driven. So, I mean, it makes sense that we're producing this kind of person that is working in the field. And I think that's something that we need to strive to change over time.
We think so too. Yeah. So switching gears just a little bit, you know, a question we like to ask is, you know, if, as you look across the industry as a whole, you know, obviously there's, you know, a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of, you know, sensory overload, if you will, of late, you know, all these breaches and, you know, Facebook and right, all the other stuff that is kind of coming at us. But, you know, looking kind of beyond that, if you will, I mean, what do we as security professionals really need to start talking about that maybe isn't getting the exposure that it should be today?
Yeah, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I think we need to start talking about people more than we do about pure technology solutions. So, and like what matters to people. So like you could use Facebook because it's a very timely example, and not to pick on Facebook, you know, they have a lot of things to worry about, but they could benefit from really understanding who their user base is. So their actions to date could potentially be interpreted as they're servicing more the marketers, the advertisers, the businesses, the app developers who are building on their platform and leveraging their data. You know, or they could potentially take the approach of, you know, we want to service the actual Facebook users that are, you know, you and I and whoever else is on Facebook with a profile page and a timeline and all of that, and do what's in their best interests and really try to understand what's going to be most valuable to them, and then build technology around that. So I think that same kind of narrative can be applied in so many different situations for our field. You know, whether you're a tactician and you are, you know, implementing something within your organization, like, you know, trying to augment or enhance your SDLC, whether you're doing a red team assessment and you need to understand, you know, what is important to your stakeholder, what is considered the most critical, sensitive thing to them, like what could destroy them. You know, I think we just need to take a bigger emphasis on, or take a greater look at people and stop focusing so much on technology, because technology is, like anything, it is a tool that must be applied in the right context and in the right way, instead of looking at technology as the end-all be-all, as I think we are right now. So, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I really do believe that to be true and applicable in so many cases.
I completely agree with what you're saying there, Robert. We started to ask our customers, well, about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, a simple question. And this one question, which I'll tell you in just a moment, was a key differentiator. We were beginning to win engagements against very large competitors as a result of asking a simple question. And the reason why is because the security leaders we were proposing to partner with for a project had not heard anyone ask them this question. And I'll give it to you now. That question is, what is the business objective you are trying to accomplish by conducting this project?
Mm-hmm.
And when you ask a question like that, it makes, you know, the other person sit back in their seat a moment and reflect on the context of what it is they're trying to do. Because we get so mired up in, as you indicated earlier, the tactical aspects,
yep,
right?
Yeah, or we just want to do something because the industry says it's the right thing to do. That is a very real thing. So, like, I saw this thing at a conference. Everyone's doing deception. So, you know, doesn't it make sense we should do deception? You know, if I don't do it, then my peers are gonna think I'm behind the eight ball. I think that is a fantastic question. Like, really seeking to understand what you're trying to do and like asking why. And I would take that one step further and like, if more security professionals, you know, took the time to seek to understand what is the thing or the set of things that makes the company they're working for money, like where is and what is the money making machine, and I think that would help provide a lot of necessary context. Like, you know, maybe AppSec isn't the most important thing. Maybe, you know, vendor security needs to be like brought up the stack in terms of priority and importance. You know, I don't know, you know, it, because it's completely dependent on the organization, but, you know, really understanding the business is so, so important, or the organization in general. Sorry, I keep saying business, but, you know, I think this does apply in the private sector as well. Like, you know, intelligence communities are very centered around missions and these tactical pieces within this big strategic puzzle. And, you know, those folks need to understand both the strategic picture as well as the, you know, how their particular mission fits within the, you know, the tactics of that fit within the strategic picture as well, to understand like what security stuff is the most important.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the ways to do that, and I like the way you're kind of describing it, is we often get mired in, you know, we've been talking about this here today, the technology aspects, and to really step back, everybody in the business, whether you are a developer, whether you are in IT security, looking at, you know, the alerts coming off of your SIM, everybody is there to help the company create revenue or create opportunity in the marketplace, or save revenue, right? And save dollars, what have you, whatever it might be. You know, it's the old cliche, we're there to make money or save money. If you're not mapping back to one of those key objectives, then perhaps there is not alignment, and success long term is probably not going to be achieved. And I think the same can be said true for a security program. So,
absolutely.
With that in mind, you know, how are you today as a security leader helping to create that business alignment with the role you have in your company?
From that perspective, now I'll pivot and start talking more about technology, because, you know, that's like, this is a perfect segue for that. So, like, in our case, we are very focused on, you know, we are a security company, and so we are trying to market and pair our solution with potential customers who could benefit from it. You know, instead of just jamming it down the throats of anyone who will buy it. So, you know, what we do is we build software composition analysis tooling, and we help people figure out what's in their pipeline or what's in their software, what's in the dependencies that their software is using, and so on and so forth, and, you know, whether or not they might be vulnerable. And thinking about that, and the reason I say that context is we are in the business of doing business with other organizations. And so, you know, to do that, we need to have demonstrable security such that we can get through the sales process quickly and efficiently. And so a lot of what we've focused on is using technology, well, both building our technology such that it has, you know, reporting features and it's resilient against review, but also, you know, from an internal security perspective, because that's my purview, is rolling out capabilities and configuring them such that we can say with confidence and with assurance and with reporting that we are doing things in XYZ way, and then packaging all of that up for our business development people, our sales team, et cetera, to go out and have impactful conversations with potential customers or existing customers on what our internal security practices look like. And so, you know, that comes in the form of technologies that are, you know, using APIs for reporting, so we can just take that data and present it in interesting ways or in useful ways. That comes in the form of process that, you know, when we do something, it generates a report, it generates a, you know, a record of sorts that we can then go and present. But ultimately, the job of security is in protecting and enabling revenue at a security company, I believe. So, you know, a lot of what we're doing is using technology to enable and empower that machine.
All right, let's briefly return to our story about David. As David was seeking to understand his security program's current performance and thereby set appropriate priorities and expectations, he had to engage with team members and internal customers outside of the security team. So David launched an initial process assessment in TrustMap, aligned to his control framework and regulatory requirements. What David discovered was the ability to save time from previous efforts through the aggregation of multiple users' input and data points. So David leveraged TrustMap's analytics to tell a compelling story to executive leadership about the performance of the security program, investments required, and resources needed to achieve specified goals. The executive leadership and board of directors had the assumption that mobile security was an area already solved in the eyes of the leadership based on previous investment in a mobile device management system. However, based on the results of the program assessment in TrustMap, David could clearly articulate why mobile security was still underperforming to desired goals. In this case, it was the result of mobile application security and not device security. The analytics and planning intelligence from TrustMap supported David's story and allowed him to describe the estimated investments required and the difference between mobile device security and mobile application security to a non-technical audience. As a result, the leadership team acknowledged mobile application security as a priority, allocating funds to improve this area to achieve the desired maturity goals. TrustMap is for every leader who manages information security as a function of the business. And as a reminder, for listeners of this podcast, you should know that you can schedule a free trial of TrustMap. Go to trustmap.com/business. Now let's get back to the show.
So this is kind of the question that we like to ask, and Robert, I'm going to call you on it because you can't use people. I know that's a theme. We totally agree with you. But so if you could literally, you know, you put the proverbial crown on for a day, if you could change a single aspect to our entire cybersecurity industry, you know, aside from people, because we already know that it's incredibly important. You know, in your eyes, what would it be?
So I think the one thing that I would change is, and I don't know if the best way to do this is via frameworks or whatever, but I would make more things that we consume, whether they're development frameworks, libraries, cloud services, et cetera, secure by default. And so oftentimes the people who are consuming and then applying a particular set of technology, they are not security professionals. And even security professionals don't have the time to, you know, acquire a new piece of technology and then harden it to the extent that, like, you know, the most secure government agency in the world would, you know, building their own kernel code and deploying it and all of this stuff. And so having more things secure by default, whether that's development frameworks that, you know, are automatically, like, the second that you go to store a password, it's automatically decrypted with a ton of rounds applied to the end result adaptive hashed password, or, you know, things like that. Like when you are using a session cookie, it's automatically like the secure cookie attributes are applied HTTP only, secure, it's scoped to the right domain, things like that. Because in general, systems today, you know, you can think about it however you choose, but like software today and the systems of software interacting with one another today are so incredibly complex, and there's so many moving parts that it's almost impossible to stay on top of all those moving parts and harden them all appropriately and to go seek out and research what all the hardening options are. And so, you know, if I could, you know, wave a magic wand or snap my fingers and change one thing, it would be that, you know, more technology being consumed is just secure by default, and that people had to, because people are going to do what's easiest for them. Like, people make self-motivated, you know, self-interested economic decisions oftentimes, most of the times. And if it's harder and more time consuming and more of a pain to make something insecure than it is to make something secure, then they're going to make it secure. They're just going to leave it secure. And we would all be in a better place for it, I believe.
That would be an amazing accomplishment if we could get,
right?
Yeah, if we could get even 80%, right? The 80-20 rule, if we get 80% to code and deploy solutions like you described, it would be amazing.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, just do it, like, if you were to take care of it with, you know, your heavy hitter development frameworks at a bare minimum, you know, instead of having to, you know, download all these extra extensions and libraries and, you know, go into settings and apply all these things. Like, think about all the data breaches that happen. You know, you see passwords ending up everywhere. Like, we still see way too often that, you know, passwords are ending up in either just regular MD5 or SHA hashes, or they're just not hashed at all. And it's like, why is that, you know, why is it the responsibility of the developer to even have to think about that? Like, this is a solved known problem. So like, build it into the framework, make it a default thing. And if they screw it up past that because they intentionally went in and changed it, like, yes, okay, now we can have a conversation about like why that happened, but why are we not just making this happen by default? It's really confusing to me.
Why do you think that is? I'd like to gain your perspective, particularly given the company you work for.
To be honest with you, I don't know exactly. You know, it's part of it, I'm sure, is economics. Like, it would be difficult to, like let's say a framework developer wants to make sure that they create the most extensible, useful thing for as many people as humanly possible. And so they create a piece of software, a framework that is like checks all of these bare minimum boxes and then gives people all the knobs and levers that they can go play with to make something amazing. And maybe it's, to make it more accessible to the common developer, to, the hobbyist developer, whatever, or the organizations or the entities behind these systems who are producing something that is then to be consumed, they're also acting in a self-motivated, self-interested way. And it takes a longer time to configure and do all of those things themselves. And therefore they don't do it. Therefore we end up with, pushing that responsibility off onto other people. And it's the same reason like security teams oftentimes don't want to go through the process of like making processes really bulletproof. And we put the, let's use social engineering and phishing as an example. Like instead of going through and making a workflow or a process more resilient to social engineering, we push the responsibility of detecting phishing attacks onto users. And we say like, well, this is really hard. So like, you're just going to have to like find phishing emails when they come into your inbox and, be wary. So, I think that individual microeconomics aspect plays into this quite significantly, but to be honest, I have no data to back that up, and it's purely a stab in the dark, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's what my assumption is as well, and my observation. I've been in this industry for a while, and it comes down to, I think, the two things you already mentioned: ease of use, making it easy to use and low barriers of entry for either launching an application or using it. Well as the economics, I think, is number one every single time. Because if security is going to cause one extra step, meaning delayed time to launching, let's say, a software into the marketplace, or cost money to, maybe apply two-factor authentication, whatever the control might be, sometimes an organization, and I've seen this, will launch and then deal with fixing the security challenges after initial market reaction and some initial market adoption of the product. Yep. So,
yeah, but then you have these cascading failures where the consumers of those things are expected to do the, apply the security step. And if they don't, then we end up with, with these moving pieces in the bigger systems that are very obviously vulnerable. And then we have these issues that we're wrestling with, and everyone's pointing fingers, everyone's upset. It's hard to figure out like whose fault is it really?
Yep. That's exactly. Really. Yep. I think you hit the nail right on the head, Robert. That's exactly kind of what I was thinking, because it's, where does the ultimate responsibility lie? And right. Yep. And if you look at the current landscape, it's very difficult to, kind of determine that.
Absolutely.
Right. Because like you said, look, we're giving you all of the, levers and knobs that you need to configure to make our application, for instance, very, very secure. But the responsibility, company XYZ is kind of up to you. Right. And then company XYZ purchases this app or whatever it is. And, like you said, they go through and they enable all of the business or customer functionality that's required, and yet either don't have the specific knowledge of the app to be able to really kind of flip the right security switches, or, it comes down to a risk versus reward decision that, may not always be the best decision. So I think I think you've kind of outlined, again, another challenge that we have in the industry, and that is, who is kind of ultimately responsible for this?
That is a really tough nut to crack, because one side of it, one could say that, the party who is affected or who could have at the end of the line made a change to prevent something, whether it's, salting and hashing your passwords, whether it's, encrypting such and such a thing, or, whatever it happens to be, one could say that they are responsible for, either doing or not doing security, or building it into their system or their software or whatever. But, they are consumers just like we are. And it's likely that the people they are consuming from, or the entities they are consuming from, are also consumers. And it, this really, really complex supply chain of moving pieces and components that end up, starting somewhere and ending with value being produced for somebody. You know, like there's a lot of different points in that chain where a more security conscious responsibility could be applied and could probably have a great net effect, but just doesn't today in a lot of cases. You know, I don't want to say that's like an absolute thing because it's not. And there are, there are like, let's say, open source projects who are taking this stuff really, really seriously and who are trying to just patch everything. And like, even if they're relying on dependencies, they're going in and like patching that stuff and like keeping things up to date. And so like, this is not a, like an absolutism statement, but I do believe it happens far too frequently in the, and it's not just code talking about the supply chain. It's a lot of different pieces of technology.
So on that note, I want to ask one last question before we let you go. Where do you see the role of the CISO, or how do you see the role of the CISO transforming over the next, say, 24 months, or maybe not transforming at all?
Well, I think it depends on the kind of organization that the CISO is working at. So, there will be, of course, CISOs who are working in more traditional organizations that are, they're likely, like, they are just not going to be able to move as quickly as, a CISO at a, at a San Francisco Valley tech company, let's say. But in general, I think the role of the CISO is going to move away from technologist and more towards this conduit that sits at the intersection of all of these different functions across a business, between legal and the board and IT and engineering and product and HR and finance and all of these different things that end up making the business. Security is kind of a shared service, kind of like finance or legal, and they need to understand, this is something that like CFOs and chief risk officers and such, like those kind of roles understand this stuff. And it's something that I think that more and more CISOs need to come to grips with and really truly embrace, is that they are not there to be technologists. Like, the people that they hire are there to be technologists and do technical things. But the CISO is there to sit and be a conduit at the intersection of all these different moving pieces and different business functions, and translate from one function to another, translate from security to function A to function B, and really try to sort out what is actually the most important thing to be working on and where, resources need to go. Like, basically building strategy out of all of that data, instead of taking data from, your threat intelligence feeds and your security conferences, et cetera, and, using those sources to drive your strategy. I think your strategy should be like 80% driven from what's happening actually within your organization across all those different functions, and the remaining 20%, maybe just for ideas' sake, coming from outside sources like conferences, reading, threat intelligence, what have you.
Very well said, Robert. Thank you for that.
And yeah, of course.
I 100% agree. If anyone wants to get in contact with you to continue the conversation, how might they do so?
So on Twitter, I am at Holy Cyber Batman, and I also run a little just kind of passion project of mine. Again, you probably heard it many times throughout the podcast. Like, I am very interested in the people soft skills side of security, and so I booted up a little educational site where I focus on that, and I'm just trying to put out a bunch of content, and it's just me doing this stuff right now. So it's, content comes as I have time to build it, but you can find that at hackyourcybercareer.com. And I'm trying to tailor that content to people at different stages of their industry. So Twitter at Holy Cyber Batman, or check out the site. And there are plenty of ways to get in touch with me, linked from there.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. I look forward to actually checking that website out. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I appreciate, again, spending time, and thanks for your insight. It was very valuable. We covered a lot of ground today, and I think it is really helpful for everyone to hear how, security has started as a very technically focused discipline to perhaps we will see some evolving into more business and well-rounded, dare I say, overall risk manager for the business long-term.
Yep. I hope it does. you know, because like technology ends up affecting people. And so it makes sense that we should care about those people a little bit more. So broken record rant over.
It's good. All right. Thanks much and appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Security podcast. A special thanks to today's guest, Robert Wood, Chief Information Security Officer at SourceClear. Your hosts today were Chad Beckman, founder and CEO of Secure Digital Solutions, and Ed Snodgrass, Chief Information Security Officer at SDS. You can connect with Chad and Ed on LinkedIn and learn more about Secure Digital Solutions at trustsds.com. Our show was produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. Check out our next podcast episode with Barry Kaplan, leadership partner at Gartner. You've been listening to the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.